Good evening and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the greatest baseball podcast to grace your ears. I'm today's host, Matthias Altman-Kurosaki, and with me, as always, we have my amazing co-hosts, Alex Clark and Ryan Splashpots. Gentlemen, we're back on our Monday night schedule. How are we doing on this fine Monday evening?
We're doing all right over here. My voice a little bit weak here. I apologize about that. Just been coughing a little bit lately, but got back from the All-Star game, was part of that whole entire experience. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But other than that, you know what? Things are going all right. Good to be back on the mic again.
Bro, it's been like a week and a half now. I feel like we've missed so much baseball. Like the last time we had a podcast, Alek Manoah was getting lit up like a Christmas tree in the Florida Gulf Coast League. And, you know, then the next day he like turns the Tigers into a clown show. Granted, that doesn't mean anything, but it's good to be back. Hello and welcome. Let's cook.
Yeah, it has been a minute, actually. I think the last time we recorded, if I'm not mistaken, was the Thursday before All-Star festivities. So, yeah, it's been about 10 days or so. But, yeah, it's good to be back. And you guys can probably expect this to go up every Tuesday morning going forward. Pending schedule changes, you know, those will happen. But yeah, I'm doing all right. I actually got some pretty cheap tickets to go see a wonderful matchup on Wednesday night, which is Mets White Sox. Can't miss. Make sure you have your calendar marked to watch that on Wednesday night. Just kidding. Don't do that.
Here's the thing. That's definitely a trash bowl, but I also went and saw on my California trip the ones on our Twitter know that I went and saw White Sox A's, which I think we can all objectively say that the A's are a worse team than the Mets.
I mean, yes.
Well, hey, my team just lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox, so I don't know how
we also lost a series to the A's.
You know,
but ironically, we own both of your sport. Bozo squads, so get dunked on.
But good effort.
Yeah, baseball is a crazy sport because the team with the best record in baseball somehow lost a series to the team with the worst record this year. And no disrespect to the White Sox, by the way. They do have some nice players like Luis Robert. But yeah, I get to – it's actually going to be the first time I've seen the White Sox play in a game, which is crazy because I've gone to a lot of baseball games in my life. It's also going to be the first time I've ever seen Justin Verlander pitch in person, which – I find hard to believe. But then again, he was in the American League for a while, so he didn't really come to New York
funny,
that
Mac?
Often.
I've been to a Tigers game against the White Sox that Verlander pitched.
Wow. Yeah, that's – I mean, I've also never been to Detroit. I've never been to Comerica Park. So, yeah, I've never been to Houston either, so I never really had a chance to watch Verlander pitch in person. So, yeah, that I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. I hear that he warms up to Till I Collapse by Eminem, which I think is pretty sick. Anyways, let's talk about All-Star Week, by the way, for a second. And, you know, it just passed. Alex, you got to witness this all in person. Tell us, how awesome was that experience?
Ooh, dog, that was from being a fan to being just immersed in everything with the All-Star experience. It was absolutely amazing. From the draft itself to the Futures game to even the HBCU Classic, which, by the way, the Swingman Classic, absolutely great, needs to happen again. And I can't say enough good things about that as well. But overall, all the events were really fun. The only thing that really needed work was the app because it didn't work at all and it screwed a lot of people out of getting good autographs. So anyway, regardless of that, being able to be part of an All-Star game, I've been wanting to do this since they came to Seattle the first time. And I didn't get to go because I was just a wee lad. But getting to be part of all this and to fully immerse yourself, seeing everything that's going on, where you're seeing legends just everywhere. You're getting to see not just the All-Star game. A lot of us, we just kind of think of the All-Star game as, you know, itself. Maybe we think about the Home Run Derby. But there's so much more that goes into it. There's so much drama. There's so much extra build that goes into everything. Like, I got up early every morning to make sure that I was there first thing I could to try and get autographs. I was there to try and just take part in every single event that I possibly could. And every event brought something new. Every autograph session was different. All the people there were incredible. I didn't tell you this, Splash, but you asked me a while back ago, you needed teams to make a grid that we then, I believe, posted on. And to get the teams for it, I just looked at the first five teams that I saw at the All-Star game, and all of those teams were represented by fan bases that had traveled for it. So it was so cool getting to see everybody there, see all the different fan bases come together for this one cool event. And while the All-Star game itself was awesome, the Derby, oh Lord, if you ever want to see a home run derby, do it. It is even better than advertised. It was incredible just watching homer after homer after homer after homer. Although I will say, I think I'm a little bit more on the side now of we need to bring back the 10 outs as opposed to the 4 minute cardio fest. But after watching it now live, but getting to see everything and getting to hear everyone, because that was the big thing that I took from it, and I know a lot of reporters did too, is that I think after this event, Seattle put itself truly on the market as a true big time large market sports area. Being able to see how loud the fans can be, how representative that they could be at this event, all you needed to do was go to the draft. Not even a full event, just go to the draft and hear the representation, hear Robert Manfred get booed religiously over and over again. Those pictures of him like grimacing, trying to get through words. Yeah, that was because of us. That was because of the fans that were there. It was amazing seeing how well, even during a bad Mariners season right now, which as I'm not gonna say horrid, but definitely below expectations, being able to show up and to be able to have that level of just letting your names be out there and letting your voices be heard. This was an event that I will never forget. This entire week, from the very first event, the Swingman Classic, all the way to the All-Star game, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, I mean, from everything you were sending us, it seemed like it was just an absolute blast. That's the one thing I kind of, you know, because I got to experience the All-Star game back in 2013 in Flushing, and I went to the Futures game, I went to the Home Run Derby, but I feel like I didn't, you know, take advantage of everything that was being offered. And maybe it's because I was, you know, I was only 13 at the time. I didn't have, you know, a full-time job or anything, so I couldn't really pay for anything myself. But I, you know, I went to those two events, but I didn't get to do any like the autograph sessions or anything like that. And I guess it's a little tougher in New York, maybe, especially because, you know, Flushing, there isn't as much to do. I feel like granted, I've never been to Seattle, so I don't know much about it. But like Flushing would probably, it's probably a bit tougher to do stuff like that. But I definitely hope I get to experience another All-Star game. Whether it's in New York or in any other city, because it seems like it's, I mean, it's a ton of fun. The one thing I wish was that the draft, because back in 2013, the draft was still in the middle of June. You know, now it's part of All-Star Week, and I really wish they had done that earlier. So I hope I get to experience that too. Splash, I know obviously you and I got to watch on television. What was your favorite part of All-Star Week?
First off, from the bottom of my heart, Major League Baseball, you can lick my anus for taking away the All-Star game in 2021. That is
I heard they
unforgivable.
might give it to Atlanta in 2025, from what I hear.
Yes, that's fine, but they took it away in 2021, and we are supposed to have a Hank Aaron ceremony in the middle of Colorado. Disrespectful. Anyways, my big takeaway from All-Star Weekend is it's cool to see the players just like vibe with each other, right? It's cool, like the friendships these guys have as like the brotherhood of baseball players, and they all, you know, they have their rivalries, right? You have the Dodgers and the Padres, the Braves and the Mets, the Mariners and themselves, right? You have all these, you know, rivalries, and at the end of the day, they're all just dudes, right? They're all dudes that are living out their dreams for the most part, you know. And it's cool to just see them, with other people in their element, and they're not competing, right? It's like they are competing, but in most of the All-Star festivities, they're not competing. It's just, oh, talk about Ohtani, or talk about Acuna, or talk about who are you excited to see? Like Zach Gallen wanted to talk to Clayton Kershaw about his curveball. Like, it's cool for me to see that camaraderie, even in social media posts. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I also enjoy that aspect because it's like the first time you really see these guys, like, they're teammates with their rivals and stuff like that. You get to see like Kodai Senga and Shohei Ohtani were finally like, in the same stadium, taking part in the same game, which was pretty cool. And Senga was talking about how he has a good relationship with Ohtani from their days in Japan. So that was pretty awesome. I also One of my favorite moments, I think, was the Elias Diaz 2-run homer, partially because Diaz is a first-time All-Star at age 32 and really wasn't an everyday player until basically this year or maybe last year. So seeing him get All-Star Game MVP, I mean, that's one of those, like, it's a moment he'll remember forever. I mean, heck, that'll be a great trivia question down the line of who is All-Star Game MVP in 2023. Which it's Elias Diaz now. So, I thought that was pretty awesome seeing him get that trophy. So that was one of my favorite moments. Also, the I mean, e even though he like watching Pete Alonso lose, that Julio Rodriguez home run derby round was freaking amazing. Like, I've never seen a guy make it look so easy, really. So that was pretty cool, and I will say I am happy for Vlad Guerrero to see him win a derby. He's had that. It's been a long time coming for him. So anyway, any other final thoughts on All-Star Week before we move on?
Yeah, a couple real quick on it. You brought up the Julio in the Home Run Derby. I don't know how the TV broadcast felt, but being there live for that and just
Oh
hearing
yeah.
Julio,
Exactly.
Julio,
Yeah.
Julio over and over again was incredible. It was like every time that he hit a home run, you just took the volume dial and turned it to 11. Every time that he missed one, it went down to like two, and it just kept going like this. Except during that first round, it was firmly stuck at 14. Excuse me. But one thing I want to bring up one last thing before, and I see Splash, you also want to say something too. So let me say this one last bit first here. There's a lot of talk, and we're not going to talk about it too much today. There's a lot of talk about the future of one Shohei Ohtani. And I think that what happened at the All-Star game and everything else with that was a huge advertisement for Ohtani trying to come to Seattle, especially with a few things that happened. I'll just mention two things. One, when Ohtani was pulled from the game, there was a really, honestly, a really nice picture of Griffey hugging him from the back in the dugout as he was going in, followed by him having a really fun quote in a press conference. But the biggest one, and this went all over Twitter, went fully viral, was the fans chanting when Ohtani was batting, "Come to Seattle. Come to Seattle." Oh my God. I don't think I've ever heard that for a player. I have never once heard something like that at that strength, too. Having 47,000 all cheering at one man saying, "We love you. We will support you. Please come here. Please let this happen." And I was absolutely floored by it. Just that show by the Mariners fans getting that chance to do that was, whoo, that was awesome.
So in slightly unrelated news, I'm going to jump back to the Elias Diaz thing. Diaz has this weird thing called playing at Coors Field, and he can't hit homers anywhere besides Coors. He did hit one in Fenway, and he did hit one in Atlanta eventually. But heading into the All-Star game, he had 9 home runs on the season, 7 at home, 2 on the road, and about 150 at bats on the road. And then he hits one in the All-Star game because baseball. So yeah, gotta love baseball. 95 100 odds. So if you put $10 on Elias Diaz winning All-Star Game MVP, you'd walk away with a cool $950. So,
yeah, I seriously wonder if, because I know we brought it up in my trivia segment last time, that J.D. Giroux, he won All-Star Game MVP in the only All-Star Game he participated in. We don't know. Is this going to be the only All-Star Game Elias Diaz participates in? We do not know. But I don't know how many other people can say that they took part in one All-Star Game and happened to win All-Star Game MVP. So I'm sure at some point we can figure that out. But anyways,
we're going to move right along. Those shots by Elias Diaz were great, though. I mean, to be fair, that home run was majestic.
Yeah, and to do it off Felix Bautista, who's been arguably the best reliever in baseball this year, he's no slouch. I mean, that's a guy who's averaging 2 strikeouts per inning this year. So
not to put the little plug in that on that point, but I think it made a little sense that a quote unquote King Felix got T-Mobile Park and got the loss in T-Mobile Park. So just want to throw that out there.
That's
but
what happens.
Also, can we please just put that talk aside about the King Felix stuff? Even Felix Bautista said he doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, also, Orioles legend Felix Mountain. PA. He's the real King Felix.
Felix PA, yeah, Felix PA.
Yes, Felix great PA.
Cubs legend. Cubs and Orioles legend. He hit for the cycle one
legend.
Time.
Yes, he did. Legend. Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on. There's been a lot of talk before the All-Star break, and now I think it's time that we do it. We're going to do our midseason awards. We're going to talk about the Rookie of the Year, which is we call the Kosuke Fukudome Award, the Cy Young, better known as the Zach Duke Award, and the MVP, better known as the Pablo Sanchez Award. So I say we start off with the Rookie of the Year, and we're going to start in the American League, which I think is a much closer race than the National League, because I'll be honest, picking a leader for this, it's pretty close, in my opinion. So who do you guys have leading the AL Rookie of the Year race?
So the AL one is a bit weird. You are kind of deciding which of the stereotypes do you want, right? So the two horses that have been in this race since mid-April are Josh Young and Masataka Yoshida. So if you just look at the hitting stats in general, Masataka Yoshida has the slight advantage, and they're close enough that there's some ebbs and flows. But Josh Young has played an above average third base for the AL West leading Texas Rangers, while Yoshida has been one of the worst defensive players in baseball. He's DHing some too. So you have two opposite ends of the defensive spectrum, and you have relatively similar hitting. And to me, you look at the WAR, and Young is far and away better because the defense matters that much, and Yoshida has been that bad defensively. So it really depends on which option you like there. And Gunnar Henderson has put himself into this race. He had a huge month of June, huge start to July. You know, he's, you know, playing third, playing short all the time for Baltimore, and that's going to help his WAR total too. So he's passed Yoshida in WAR. So I'm going to lean Josh Young. I think you can make a solid argument that Yoshida has had the better season. I think you can make a solid argument that if we don't look at baseball in an analytical or sabermetric mind, Yoshida might be the better player. But I think when you factor in the whole, you know, the whole thing, I think Young is the AL Rookie of the Year right now.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to agree with you here, Splash. Like, I was thinking about it too, and my first thought when I was asked the question was, obviously, it's Yoshida. Obviously. He has been an incredible hitter. He's been, and he doesn't need to have great defense considering that he's a left fielder and a DH. But here's the thing. When you're looking at who is the better player right now or who is the one that is doing more for the team at this point, I feel like you have to incorporate defense in there. And that's where Young really kind of takes the step up. Yes, as a pure hitter, Masataka Yoshida right now is basically right now the next coming of Juan Soto. But when I'm looking at this right now, I'm not just looking at a pure hitter. If I'm looking at someone who is going to be the Rookie of the Year, I want someone who is going to be the best baseball player. And I think that right now, you have to take the defense into account. I think you do have to, at least to a degree. Like, I don't think that it is the end-all be-all, but his hitting stats have also been pretty darn solid. You take a look at what he has done, a 2.5 WAR overall around again. that I know that it has defense, I get it, but still is clubbing at a 120 OPS plus with an OPS of 816. That's pretty darn solid, right? Nearly 20 home runs, a 275 batting average here in a rookie season, and is playing good defense. I don't even want to talk about the teams that they're on. Like, I still am firmly of the belief that I do not care what team you are on. As long as you are the best ball player, you deserve the award. But at this point right now, I'm going Young just because Yoshida edges out Young probably by a pretty good margin. But the good to great level defense of Young is what puts him just barely above Yoshida, but it is a very close race.
That's the thing is also, you know, Gunnar Henderson, we've barely mentioned really in this race, but, you know, Gunnar Henderson got off to a really, really slow start this year. And he's been great ever since the calendar hit in June, even. But this is incredibly difficult to pick because, on one hand, Yoshida has the higher OPS and the higher OPS plus. He doesn't strike out much. He draws walks at a decent rate. And yes, while he hits the ball on the ground, his expected batting average is still pretty high. Like, he's a very good hitter, and the Red Sox would not be near contention without him. That's the thing. And then you look at Young, who has hit 19 homers. He strikes out a lot. I mean, there's no way around that. But he hits the ball pretty hard. His expected slugging is really good. In fact, he's actually underperforming his expected stats a decent amount. Plus, like you guys mentioned, much better defender than Yoshida. So, and I'm going to throw one other thing out there, and I really don't like making this argument because I remember this was the argument made against Hideki Matsui back when he was a rookie on the Yankees, which is that Young is like a true rookie right now. Yoshida's had a long career in Japan and is like, it's kind of tough to say whether he's really like a quote-unquote rookie to the majors when he has plenty of experience playing at a high level in Japan. So if you are of that school of thought, maybe that factors into your voting. For me, yeah, not really. But I just wanted to present that argument because I'm sure some people are thinking that. But I'm going to go with Young here. It's a really close race, but I think he just barely has that edge thanks to his strong defense at the hot corner. Alex, you look like you wanted to say something. Were you?
Yeah, I wanted to say that if you think that's just because you played in another league disqualifies you for getting like this kind of award in baseball, check yourself. You're just wrong. The styles of baseball are so unbelievably different. It's not a skill difference. It is in how differently is the game played. And to be fair, that's almost more of a benefit for Yoshida, because now he has to not only fully adapt to a new style of the game, whereas, say, a guy like Young, who's come up through the minor league system and gotten used to the American style of baseball, you have one. Yes, say he's playing against top-level talent over in Japan, but he has to go to a very different style over here in America. So give that man more credit, if anything.
And then you have things like a language barrier as well. So you kind of can get lost in the weeds there. But two guys that I'm going to throw out there, you have Yennier Cano of the Baltimore Orioles, an all-star this year.
Yes.
Reliever who is the leader, if not the leader, among the league leaders in things like championship win probability added, all of the high leverage stuff that relievers do. Well, Cano is at the top of everything. So you can throw his name out. Also, this is a funny one if you've watched a Yankees game all season, but Anthony Volpe has more WAR than Masataka Yoshida. Gotta love baseball.
Yeah, well, Volpe is a speed demon, by the way, and he's finally figuring out the whole hitting thing, it seems like. So, Volpe's definitely on the upswing. Yeah, Cano's a tough one because relievers, like, rarely win this award. I mean, we saw it a few years ago. I mean, Emmanuel Clase was arguably the best reliever in the American League and somehow wasn't even a finalist for Rookie of the Year, which made no sense. But in years past, I mean, we've seen Andrew Bailey and Neftali Feliz, Kazuhiro Sasaki. Like, we've seen Devin relievers Williams. Win. Devin Williams, yes, in 2020. So we've seen relievers win the award before. I wouldn't be too surprised if Cano at least get some votes. I don't know if he'll win it, but yeah, that's to your guys' point. I really do not like the argument that Yoshida isn't a real rookie, but for some reason, people like making that argument. I think it's dumb. So tune that out. If anyone tries presenting that to you with that that argument, ignore them.
Was Ichiro a rookie saying. In 2001?
Exactly. Ichiro was a rookie.
He was a rookie.
Was Ohtani
a
rookie? Yes, Ohtani
was
a rookie.
Ohtani a rookie? You bet he was a rookie.
Exactly.
Hey, and didn't Josh Young play a little bit at the end of last season?
Briefly, his first
season of Major League Baseball. Yeah.
Exactly. There's so many different
things
going on.
Exactly. We
got to
apply the same logic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the National League. And this one, I think we have a clear-cut favorite. Splash, you go first on this one. Leading the NL Rookie Year race, who do you got?
It's Corbin Carroll, but I'm going to take my time to talk about someone different, and that is San Francisco Giants catcher Patrick Bailey, who is graded out as one of the better defensive catchers in baseball, which is impressive considering he's a rookie. And, you know, the Giants have had this whole fiasco since Buster Posey retired of, oh, well, is Joey Bart? Is Joey Bart? Is Joey Bart? No, apparently Joey Bart stinks for some reason. I don't know, but they have Patrick Bailey. He's been very good defensively. He has a 114 OPS plus. You know, I don't think he's going to catch any of the Reds dudes or Alvarez, even among NL rookie catchers or Senga or obviously Corbin Carroll. But I do want to highlight Patrick Bailey as a guy that might get a couple third place votes, you know, might get a couple, you know, down ballot rookie of the year votes. And yeah, he's a good player. Oh, he's a rookie. Oh, that's cool. The Giants pull another one out of their butt for some reason. So shout out to Patrick Bailey.
I mean, yeah, look, I was going to make a joke about this one. Decided not to. Seattle boy right now. I love Corbin Carroll. I think that Carroll is an amazing ball player. And this year, just to give kind of an idea, the second place guy that I have for this is Matt McClain. And don't get me wrong, Matt McClain, he's had himself a pretty darn solid year, 2.1 WAR with a 128 OPS plus. I mean, look, the dude's been doing pretty darn good. He's batting just near 300. But then you look at Corbin Carroll and realize that nothing matters. With Corbin Carroll, he has an OPS plus of 143. 143 and a WAR just short of 4. The dude does everything. The dude is playing incredible baseball, not just at the plate. Like, everyone was talking about that at the beginning of the season. What's going to separate Corbin Carroll from everyone is his speed. Well, they were right about that, but they forgot to also mention his bat, his fielding, his attitude, everything about him set him apart from everyone else. This dude steals bases at an incredible clip. This dude plays incredible defense. Watching him play, I have not seen this level of speed and this level of like explosiveness since Griffey. Like, watching him play is truly electric. Getting him in center field, this dude is far and away the number one for NL Rookie of the Year. And one more thing, just to put on top of it, everyone thought this guy was just going to be a base hit guy. A lot of people thought he was going to be a guy that just got, you know, base hit, stole second, stole third, goes from there. The dude's also clubbed 18 home runs. The dude has an OPS of almost 900. Like, that's not just rookie of the year level numbers. That's MVP potential numbers. Like, is he a guy for NL MVP? No. But is he in the discussion? Yes. He has been absolutely incredible. And right now is far and away the slam dunk number one NL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, there's not much to dislike about Corbin Carroll. This guy is, you know, it's the interesting because he did come up briefly at the end of last year, and he was solid in his, you know, in his brief cup of coffee, you know, slugged 500. But he's really improved across the board. He's cut his strikeouts down. He's hit the ball harder. You know, he's hitting fewer ground balls, hitting the ball in the air more. There's a lot to like. And, you know, 18 homers and 26 steals to go with 20 doubles. You know, we're looking at a guy who could finish 30-30 in his rookie year. He's already on the verge of a 2020-2030 year. So as long as he stays healthy, I know we've had a couple scares with his shoulder. As long as he stays healthy, He's the runaway winner. Heck, he could probably not play another game the rest of the year and he'll still win. One guy I do want to talk about briefly is Kodai Senga, which I don't think Senga is going to win this award, but I just want to talk about this incredible strides he's made lately. You know, this guy, he struck out 30% of the batters he's faced, but his big issue early in the year were walks, and he's cut his walk rate down significantly over the past 6 weeks or so. So I think, you know, he's finally getting used to pitching more than once a week. You know, he hasn't been great on 4 days rest, but he's been better ever since, you know, that first time they tried doing it. And really, I mean, you see, he works well with no matter who is he works well with whatever catcher catches him. His ghost fork is one of the best pitches in baseball. He can run that fastball anywhere between 94 to 99. He's a lot of fun to watch. And I know there were some talking heads trying to declare him a disappointment after what, a few bad starts. Well, he's actually pretty good. He's lowered his ERA down to 3.2 also. Heck, he even made the All-Star game. So Corbin Carroll, though, is the runaway right now. And I really don't expect people to, I don't really, really don't expect anyone to catch him, if I'm being honest.
I
Matt
mean,
McClain is probably
I don't think
second.
anyone actually. Ellie De La Cruz is faster,
I was
but
about to say that's
oh well,
true.
yeah,
Very
actually,
few
he might
people
not
can
have
catch
enough
him.
track to do it though.
Yeah,
True.
that's the issue. Anyway,
I
yep.
do want to say one last thing on Carroll, actually, and this is kind of going back to the All-Star game too. His appearance at the All-Star game was incredible. Like I said, he was a Seattle kid, so all the stuff talking about like his mom posting a picture of him in the glove outside left field. And then Seattle even doing a nice little tribute of putting his banner right over the gate that he used to walk into when he was a kid was awesome. And then the Seattle reaction to that, including Tom Hutler, Mariner PA, calling out, God, welcome home, Corbin Carroll. And that's in that. Oh, man. The sound of the fans there was amazing. It felt like it was welcoming a kid home. It was so cool.
So I do have one fun fact before I move on. Take a guess who among rookies has the lowest WAR total.
What, like, by like qualified rookies?
Nope, all rookies. Worst WAR
All
total.
rookies?
All rookie hitters. I don't bother with
Dude,
the pitchers.
I could not tell you, man. That's
It is
I don't know.
Jordan Walker.
Oh my
Wow.
God. Is that, I'm assuming that's because of his defense.
So
Because he
plus
can
three
hit a
batting
bit.
runs, minus three base runs, minus one double play runs, minus two position runs, and a whopping minus 14 fielding runs in 54
That's the
games.
problem.
Boys and girls, that is on pace to be as not quite as bad as Adam Dunn the 1 year he had negative 43, but on pace for negative 42
43.
over a full season. So Jordan Walker, for the love of all things holy, either please just get better as a fielder. Or be good enough as a hitter to just DH every day. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I watched Jordan Walker play left field when the Cardinals were in town here, and it was rough. I mean, it's tough because you have probably the best or one of the best corner infield duos ever, in Goldschmidt and Arenado. So unfortunately, Walker has to play the outfield for now. But I'm curious to see how his career unfolds because I feel like we all were high on him coming into the year, and look, he can hit. I've watched it with my own eyes. But anyways, let's move on to the Cy Young conversation because I don't know, we're gonna start in the American League, but I feel like this one's tougher to gauge because there have been so many injuries this year, which and a lot of them have happened to the leading candidates. So let's start in the American League. Alex, I'm gonna go to you first here. Who's your leader in the AL Cy Young race?
Yeah, this one's a tough one, honestly. And like, there are definitely a few names that have like jumped off, that have definitely jumped off the page. But like you said, we've had so many injuries this year that it's made it really hard to try and figure out who are you going to go to. But there are definitely a few names to consider. And man, I don't. Can you come back to me on this one? Like, this is one where I've legitimately gone back and forth on, and I don't have an argument just yet.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. This is a weird one, both AL and NL, that it seems like the optimal strategy to stay on top of the rankings is just get injured. If you look at our Monday MLB mentions today at LAR underscore baseball, you can see that the number one pitcher in both of our lists was on the IL as of writing the lists. So fun fact there. But in the American League, I'm going to go with Shane McClanahan. He also dealt today, which is nice. He came back from the IL against Texas. Six innings, two runs, six punchies. So, good start there in Texas. So no small task there. But this is really a year of there's a lot of guys jockeying for that number one spot. You have Nate Eovaldi, who's had a phenomenal season. The rate metrics really like him, or not the rate metrics, like the volume metrics really like him. Stuff like the win probability added for starting pitchers really likes him because he pitches deep into games. He's pitching in those high leverage moments as a starter, which isn't very common anymore. Then you have other guys. You have the Twins' host of players, including Sonny Gray, who pitched today. I don't know how well he did. You have Gerrit Cole. You have the Mariners guys, Castillo and Kirby. You have Framber Valdez, who got lit on fire his last start. Screw you. He was on my fantasy team. So it's just this, ebb and flow of very good pitchers, but I don't think, at least in the American League, I don't think there's a standout this year. But I think McClanahan's probably the top dog as of right now.
Yeah, so I have McClanahan too, I think. And really it's he leads the AL and ERA. He leads the AL and ERA plus. By a lot of metrics, he has not been as good as he was last year. That's the thing is last year I had him as the leading candidate too until he got hurt. So the whole thing is if McClanahan stays healthy and isn't able to go, say, maybe 180 innings this year, or even 175, I think he wins the award. I think he can probably still strike out around 200 batters, maybe a little under, but I think he's probably the most complete option you can go with here. If you want to go for more of a high volume guy, you can go with Framber Valdez, maybe Sonny Gray or Pablo Lopez or Eovaldi, like you mentioned, or Castillo. Or Kirby, who was my preseason pick. But yeah, I have McClanahan leading the pack, but like Splash said, it's incredibly difficult to pick like a clear favorite in I'd say either Cy Young race. So Alex, do you have your pick now?
Yeah, to be fair, like what I was going between a few names, and I really had to talk myself out of Kirby because I want to say Kirby so desperately badly. I'm actually wearing his All-Star jersey right now, but I would say right now I'm probably just gonna give it to McClanahan. But that and that's the thing is that what we've been talking about here. I think that overall, this is a list that is going to change tremendously as we get through more of the season. It's going to be because of injuries. It's going to be because people are going to be coming in, coming back to the point where it's going to almost be a race to make sure to see who's even going to be qualified at the very end of it. And that's something that's a little scary to kind of say, actually. But overall, right now, I think the best one right now is McClanahan. I want to say also Framber Valdez has been doing amazing work, even though that pains my soul to say. And then, because to heal my soul a little bit, George Kirby has been amazing except for his last start. Last start, I don't know what happened. Cary Carpenter decided to become Barry Bonds. But regardless, anything like that, I think right now I'm probably going to go McClanahan.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing is, if I'm gonna pick someone to be in second right now, it's probably Valdez because of his volume of work and how effective he's been. So it's an incredibly difficult award to gauge, I think, because pitchers break down pretty easily throughout the year, and you see, I mean, we've seen a lot of IL stints to a lot of high profile guys this year. So speaking of which, let's go over the National League, and I'll go first on this one because my leading candidate is also currently on the injured list, but he should be back in a couple of weeks, which is Clayton Kershaw. He's had a vintage Kershaw year, 2.55 ERA. His fastball velocity is up this year, which is a breath of fresh air. The IL stint is not a breath of fresh air. It's kind of frustrating, if I'm being honest, but 105 strikeouts in 95 and a third innings, 2.55 ERA, best in the NL, 173 ERA plus, best in the majors, 1.049 WHIP, best in the National League, made the All-Star game again, his, I believe, 10th All-Star game appearance, and he's currently in line to win his 6th ERA title. I mean, this guy, if he could only stay healthy. It's like, I feel like we say this about Mike Trout in the American League. You know, he's a generational talent, arguably the best pitcher of his generation, probably the best pitcher of his generation, definitely the best left-handed pitcher of his generation, and he's just always on the injured list. So hopefully he comes back and can at least be 80% of what he's been this year. I think he wins the award because really it's tough to pick a favorite here. You know, I was thinking of maybe giving Justin Steele or Marcus Stroman the nod. Steele got lit up in his last start. Stroman's had some up and downs lately, but I think Kershaw has the edge over those two guys right now.
You know, just looking through some of the National League stats, so ones you might care about if you're picking the best pitcher. Well, base out wins saved, Blake Snell leads. Situational wins saved, Marcus Stroman leads. Win probability added, Alexis Diaz leads. FIP, Spencer Strider leads. The ERAs, Clayton Kershaw leads. You know, strikeout to walk ratio, Braxton Garrett leads. WAR, Logan Webb leads. So there's no guy that kind of sweeps, right? So you're, you know, picking and choosing, and you're having to say, well, would I rather have a 2.55 ERA, but the guy's injured and he's missed a couple starts, or a 2.71 ERA, but Blake Snell walks everyone and his brother, or a 2.82 ERA, and I look weird because I know Alex Cobb's ERA, or, you know, one of the Chicago guys, or do you just go with the best pitcher you think, Zach Gallen or Spencer Strider? Those guys are pretty good, right? But you run into this tough situation that it's probably Clayton Kershaw. If the season ended today, I would vote number one would be Clayton Kershaw. The season doesn't end today, and I know Kershaw is going to miss a little bit more time with the injury, and that's just a tough break for everyone involved. So Kershaw is my pick now. I do have to lean like a Gallen the rest of the season, and if I wasn't a Braves fan, probably Strider, but he's made me mad too many times for me to pick him. So probably Gallen the rest of the way, but Kershaw would be my pick right now.
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to go Gallen. I think that Gallen is a fantastic player, and I think at this point right now, yeah, probably at this exact moment, it is probably Kershaw, but when I look at Gallen, this guy has had an absolutely incredible season so far, and honestly, looking at it, he's the guy that I think is probably going to go all the way and do it. We've seen times with Kershaw that he hasn't been able to go the entire distance, especially at his age right now, where he's getting up there. This is his 16th major league season. The dude is 35 years old. Zach Gallen has
that's absolutely crazy to me, by the way.
Exactly, right? Like, I had to do a bit of a double take on that. It feels like it was just yesterday that he was doing sub 2 ERAs. Like, it feels like it was not that long ago, but you just got to remember that with Kershaw, back when he was doing those incredible seasons, dude, his last time where he had in 2020, I'm going to go back to that part, in 2020, which again is the COVID season, I get it, he was 32 years old. And in 2017, when he had an ERA of 2.31, he was 29. Like, the fact that he's doing this, oh, and then also just to add a little more salt onto that as well, 2022 had a 2.28 ERA and a FIP of 2.57. That is incredible to see. I think right now, Clayton Kershaw is having an amazing go-through, and honestly, 100% deserves it if he does win the award, but I also love what I'm seeing from Gallen. I think that Gallen has been doing incredible work and has really started to solidify the things that he's been working on over the last several years. So right now, I think, okay, I'm going to kind of go with what you said there a moment ago. If I'm picking for right now, if the season ended today, it's Kershaw. But I think at the end of the year, it's probably going to be Gallen.
I just want to throw this out there. Charlie Morton has allowed one earned run in July across 19 innings, and somehow he's top 10 in the NL in ERA. What world are we living in?
Yeah, that's Charlie Morton's another guy I feel like is trying to defy Father Time. And speaking of which, there were some talks that maybe Kershaw could be retiring after this year. I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised, but I feel like I can't quite see him hanging it up yet. But who
That may be a good
knows?
time to go out on top, but
I mean, yeah, maybe he does go out on top. I feel like 35. On one hand, I'm like, wow, 35 is like young for a player to retire. But at the same time, when you put it that way, that he's been in the majors since 2008. I remember watching him like his second big league start at Shea Stadium as a 20-year-old, and it's like, I mean, it's just crazy to think of like how long ago that was, and that, I mean, he's probably the one of, if not the greatest pitcher we've ever witnessed, at least in our lifetime. So, yeah,
yeah, one thing I
Kershaw,
want, yeah, with Kershaw, like, especially to give a Mariner perspective on it as well. James Paxton, when he was coming up here, was being touted as a young Clayton Kershaw. And now we're seeing Clayton Kershaw outlast the guy that was the younger Clayton Kershaw. Like, that's the level of how the staying power this guy has.
yeah, and if he's also done it for one team his entire career. I mean, there kept being talks like, oh, he's gonna go sign with Texas because he's from the Dallas area, but like he's hung around in LA the entire time. I can't see him playing in another uniform. That's the other thing. But anyways, we're gonna move on to the MVP award, and let's start in the American League. And I feel like we can talk about Shohei Ohtani until we're all blue in the face because. And just stop me now if you have a candidate other than Shohei Ohtani leading your race. All
So
right, I'm gonna.
one thing I want to say here is I want to talk about my number one for the American League MVP, and that is going to be our Labs legend Mike Ford,
Oh,
who on
perfect.
the season right now has a 0.5 WAR and a 154 OPS plus with a 927 OPS. My dudeskies, when you have an OPS of 927 and an OPS plus of 154, I don't know what more you
That's
want,
MVP
guys. I mean,
numbers.
those are MVP numbers. The dude so far this season has 9 home runs and 24 hits. This dude right now has just, I think if my math is a little bit is correct here, has over one third of his hits have
Oh,
been
yeah.
home runs that he has absolutely launched into right field. The dude has been mashing a slugging percentage of 611. Let me say that one more time. Slugging 611. The dude is the
That's,
far and away MVP.
oh yeah. So I'll throw this out here though, which is so Ohtani is the clear-cut favorite here. I mean, he's leading basically every category you could ask for. You know, home runs, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus, triples. You know, batting average against, wins above replacement. I mean, name a stat, he's probably leading it or near the top of the leaderboard. But I will throw this out there that two of the guys we had, at least getting close to him, are both injured. Again, Aaron Judge and Yordan Alvarez are both hurt. So, considering all that, who would you guys consider the runner-up to Ohtani in this race?
Okay, speaking of injured, it's Corey Seager. And we saw, I guess, the blueprint last year of how to win an MVP over Shohei Ohtani. Basically, you had to be at a premium defensive position, being at least an average, if not above average defender like Aaron Judge was. And you have to have a historically productive season like Judge did with the OPS above 1100 and an OPS plus above 200. Corey Seager is kind of doing this. He has a 182 OPS plus, which barely beats Ohtani. That's the issue. Barely beats Ohtani. He's leading the batting title race in the American League. I know he doesn't qualify, but if you add hitless at bats, he still would lead it. He's slugging 600 and he plays for Texas, so he's going to get those extra at bats. So in theory, he should catch up with the whole qualifiers thing. And he's played an improved defensive shortstop. He's at 4.1 WAR in 62 games. That is an incredible pace. Even if you account for the games he's missed, he's still on pace for about an 8 WAR season, 8.5 WAR season. So I think Seager has a slim shot if Ohtani gets traded to the National League tomorrow, which I guess there's a non-zero chance that happens. If Ohtani gets hit by a meteor, or if Ohtani continues to stink on the mound, he has an 8 ERA in July. So if Ohtani slips or has like April and May production at the plate, because in June he was sensational. It's one of the best months we've ever seen by any player ever, just the hitting. But if he's like April Ohtani hitting and Seager moves closer to that 200 OPS plus mark and he's playing in every game and he ends up with 140 games played or 135 games played, that's still not enough really to me. But I think Seager's the runner up right now. Just what he's done to Texas, how they performed without him, but how much he means to the lineup, how productive he's been. He's hitting 355. He's slugging 625. Those are, where was Aaron Judge last year? Oh, he was slugging over 600. Seager's in the quadruple digits here with his OPS. So if we're like excluding Ohtani, or we say Ohtani gets traded to the National League and he's ineligible, whatever, I think Seager's the guy.
Splash, I don't know what you were saying though about like the blueprint for beating Ohtani in the MVP race. The real blueprint is you got to be at least 6 foot, at least 100 kilograms, or around 220 pounds, and lefty and hit homers at an incredible clip, like Mike Ford, my buddy,
Okay,
has been doing.
Corey Seager is 6'4", weighs 215, 97 kilos, and bats left-handed. So
Is
he
that
fits
97
all.
kilos?
Yeah, 97
How'd you
kilos.
know
He's
that
not
off the
100
top of your head?
kilos.
Wow.
I'm on his
100,
baseball
didn't make
reference
it.
page.
Oh,
He's
man.
not a labs.
Sorry.
Hey, look, he's a left-handed hitter. He's 6'4". He weighs 215. I don't know. I don't know what's not to like. Also, did you guys realize that the moment Corey Seager takes the field next year, he will be Hall of Fame eligible?
Oh, wow.
Wait, has it? Oh, my God. Has it already
Wow.
been?
Yeah.
No,
Yeah.
his
Next
came up in
year's going to be his 10th
2015.
season.
Yeah.
He debuted in
Jeez, right.
2015.
I'll also say one last thing on this as well. To put Mike Ford above Corey Seager, Corey Seager's face looks like it just has no facial hair to it, whereas Mike Ford's face looks like he was chiseled like a Greek Adonis. So checkmate. But okay, if you want an actual answer, yeah, no, my runner up at this moment is Corey Seager. He has been doing absolutely incredible. An OPS of 1043, an OPS plus of 182. I mean, come on, the dude has been incredible and has been playing even solid defense too. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going with Seager also. And people, we saw this coming sort of last year when they announced that they were going to ban the shift because Corey Seager was the most impacted by the shift last year. He only, he had a BABIP, batting average on balls in play, of just 242 last year. And it's because he was the most shifted against player and hit the ball into the shift the most time. Now, we don't have the shift. His expected batting average has gone from 283, which is still pretty good and over 40 points higher than what he had. It's 336 this year. His expected batting average is 336. His expected slugging is 647. His ex-WOBA is 442. His WOBA is 437. Heck, his ex-WOBAcon is 503. His hard hit rate is 57.6% this year. So Seager, not only has he gotten better because the shift is gone, he's just become better no matter what. His average exit velocity is nearly 95 miles per hour. So he's hitting the cover off the ball. His defense has been much better this year. So it's, 4.1 WAR in 62 games is nothing to scoff at. But obviously, like we were saying, he is the runner up right now compared to Ohtani. So let's move over to the National League. Again, I think there's a clear favorite here. And Splash, why don't you tell us who the clear-cut favorite is in the National League
All
MVP
right,
race?
boys and girls, I love to say this. The clear-cut National League most valuable player is Charlie Culberson. Yeah, woo, clap, clap. A 1,000 batting average. Your favorite player doesn't do that. A
Man, that's pretty
1,000 on
good.
base
1,000
percentage.
batting
Your
average.
favorite player doesn't do that. And a 1,000 slugging percentage. Your favorite player doesn't do that. Did the Braves ruin your Father's Day? Yes. to Charlie Culberson. No, if you're anyone else. So Charlie Culberson's the National League MVP, and I am muting the conversation now. But in all sincerity, it's Ronald Acuna. And we're having this debate, or baseball Twitter's having this debate. If Shohei Ohtani gets traded, would he win to a National League team? Would he win National League MVP? And you are just kind of disrespecting what Ronald Acuna is doing this season. He is doing things that, you know, you have to go back to Ricky Henderson, guys to lead the league in steals. He's actually leading the majors in steals because Estuary Ruiz is injured. But Ronald Acuna leads the majors in runs, leads the majors in stolen bases, leads the National League in slugging, leads the National League in OPS, leads the National League in OPS plus, leads the National League in total bases. Depending on what defensive metric you look at, he's very good at that. He leads all position players in WAR. He leads all position players in offensive WAR. Oh yeah, and he is the tone setter for the best team in baseball. He's hitting leadoff home runs. He's getting a walk, and he's going to steal second. Then he's going to steal third. He might take home if you're not looking. And just what Acuna does for the Braves is as valuable as I think we've seen in a while. And the special thing with Acuna, you look at it, in 2021, when he got injured, when he tore his ACL in Miami, he was the National League MVP. Point blank, maybe not as big of a gap as it was this year because Jacob DeGrom was doing Jacob DeGrom things that year and we didn't know if he was going to return. But anyways, Acuna was the MVP in 2021 when he got hurt. And this year, he's far exceeding that. He's on pace for a 10 WAR season, which is just preposterous. And the thing is, he might be getting better. He's stealing a ton of bases, and I think the power will come in later in the season, and maybe you're like, oh, well, you don't need to steal 80 bases. Maybe you're only going to settle, quote-unquote, settle for 60 bases. Yeah, fine. He's still going to rewrite the record books with whatever homer steals tally he ends up with. He has a historically relevant tally of extra base hits and steals right now, and there's 70 games to play.
Well, I mean, there's still another obvious answer, I think, in the National League. And I'm sorry to tell you this, Splash. It is a rival of the Atlanta Braves. It is of the New York Mets. When you have a man that, just like we talked about with Mike Ford, when you have a man that is over 120 kilograms and over 6 feet tall, lefty, hitting home runs a pace, and you have a face that looks like it has been chiseled by Thor's hammer itself and forged in fire. Daniel Vogelbach, the legend amongst men. Okay, fine. It's
okay.
Fine.
I'm glad we're same terms. Daniel Vogelbach is not over 6 feet. He is exactly 6 feet. He is not 6'1", so he does not fit your qualification.
No, I said 6 feet. Checkmate, Bozo. I said 6 or higher.
Yeah, 6 feet or higher.
It's 6 feet or higher.
Okay, this is revisionist history. This is just like the time I said Justin Tucker instead of Kyle Tucker, and you and Max changed the audio on me.
On top of it, though, just to let you know, though, where Mike Ford is 220 pounds around that, one Daniel Vogelbach is 270. Talk about an Adonis of a man. But regardless, no, it's Acuna. I mean, look at what he's done. Just take one look at his baseball reference page, and he's done everything you want to. He has checked every single box, and that's what makes it kind of sad a little bit for one guy that I think has also been putting together an incredible year, and that's Mookie Betts. Mookie has had himself also an amazing year, having an OPS of just under 1,000, an OPS plus of just under 160, and is batting .286. The dude has been playing incredible baseball this year, just like as you expect Mookie Betts to do. But guess what? It doesn't matter, because a man by the name of Ronald Acuna is playing for your Atlanta Braves. So at this point, it doesn't matter. It's Acuna's to win.
Yeah, that's and that's the thing, is that Acuna has 43 steals. Heck, he could have a 40-40 year for all we know. He's walking about as much as he's striking out. He leads the league in slugging percentage, steals, obviously, OPS, OPS plus, total bases, and position player WAR, which he leads all the majors in that category. So I think it's fair to say that he is the leading candidate for NL MVP. And I'm glad you mentioned Mookie Betts, though, because I was going to bring him up. He's probably the runner up right now. It's crazy because for a little guy, you know, he's only 5'9", but he's on pace to hit 45 homers this year. He's hitting the ball in the air way more than he has in the past. He has 27 homers already, 23 doubles too, by the way. Also, he's played a lot of right field. Heck, he's also played a lot of second base, and you can even throw him in at shortstop. So he's incredibly versatile, and I think that not because of how good Acuna has been, not enough people have acknowledged how great Mookie Betts has been. And also, I don't think enough people have acknowledged the fact that Mookie Betts has been in the league for about 10 years now, and he already has 60 baseball reference war. So you're looking at a guy who will probably make the Hall of Fame, and I feel like not enough people acknowledge that. Yeah, maybe he's not at the pace that Mike Trout was, but that's still very good. Anyways, so those are our midseason awards. Let us know what you feel, agree, disagree. Tell us at LAR_baseball on Twitter. We may or may not reply to you. We probably will reply to you. Just
yeah,
please
we
be respectful.
Probably will. If I'm at work, then it might take a while, but I probably will reply to you.
Yeah, my only ask is please be respectful. Don't go attacking each other for having differing opinions. But anyways, we've reached everyone.
Just continue to praise the songs of Mike Ford. Please
exactly.
Do that.
Anyways, we've reached everyone's favorite segment of every show, which is trivia. And today, Splash is hosting that part. So, Splash, take it away.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, teamwork does, in fact, make the dream work. So we are going to talk about the 20 times that teams had to have teamwork to complete a no-hitter. A certain team did this about a week ago. We didn't talk about it in the main show because we had a pretty packed show. So I'm not going to reveal the answer to that. Hopefully one of you knows who it is. So in this history of Major League Baseball, there have been 20 combined no-hitters. A bunch of teams have done them. A bunch of teams have not done them. As you can imagine, it's actually a rarer feat than a perfect game. Good job, baseball. That's pretty quirky of you. So anyways, Mac and Alex, I'm going to flip a coin. Mac, your heads. Alex, your tails. Flip a coin, and I will see if Siri cooperates. So it says, it's tails this time. So, Alex, your name of the game is to name a team who has thrown a combined no-hitter, and duplicates are allowed. So, for example, if we were doing a perfect game version of this, and you said da, 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 Cleveland,
like Yankees or something like that.
Yeah, if you said Yankees, then Matt could say Yankees, then you could say Yankees, and Matt could say Yankees again, and all of you would be accounted for.
Yeah, so no, it's Alex, it's Doom from Mario Party 4. Got it.
Yes. Okay, Alex, please choose a team who has thrown a combined no hitter, 9-inning no hitter.
Yep, Moen, I know.
Nine-plus inning.
I got you. Yep. Well, I'll talk about the most recent one without saying anything about it. I'm just going to say the Tigers.
The Detroit Tigers have the 20th of them. Alex, you're on the board.
Mac. All right. I'll go with one that is a bit further out, the Seattle Mariners.
The Seattle Mariners, including Tom Wilhelmsen. That is correct.
You're just mean, you know that.
Alex.
Yeah. No, that was, I'll get you fair. That was an amazing game. Because this is etched into my mind, and it makes me just ever so sad. The Houston Astros.
The Houston Astros is correct.
And
they
you
did
said
it in the
there,
World Series.
As I say, there are repeats allowed here, right?
Yes, correct. Repeats are allowed.
I'll go with the other Houston Astros one.
Okay, Mac, you're on the board to all. Alex.
Okay, just because I remember that Edwin Diaz closed it out, because in this amazing thing, the Mets have one.
Alex, you lead 3-2. Mac, back to
one
you.
One of the two no-hitters in franchise history. Wait, so did you say that the postseason does count towards
yes.
the total?
Postseason counts.
Then I'm going the Houston Astros again.
All right. Houston Astros
two of those were against
for three.
The Yankees.
See, this is where I'm really struggling now. I have a vague memory of the Cubs doing one. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is correct. Craig
Oof.
closed that one out. Alex, you lead 4-3.
Okay, now
Back.
I have to do some thinking here. I believe the Los Angeles Dodgers have one.
That is correct. And
The
I colored it
Mexico
in the
City
wrong way.
series.
Okay, Mac, that is on you. 4-4.
All right, well, you brought up Los Angeles. I'm also going to say Los Angeles, but the Angels this time, in my opinion, the one time I wasn't mad to get no hits in the Tyler Skaggs game.
Oh, yeah.
Angels is correct. Mac.
Now I have to do some thinking. Because oh my God. Oh my God, does this one count? I can't remember if this one counts. The Brewers?
Brewers is correct. Corbin Burns through
Let's
eight
go.
innings.
Okay.
Josh Hader closed.
So at this
Mac,
point right now,
it's 5-5.
I'll say this right now. I am out of names. I have ones that I at least like remember. I'm going to say Dodgers again.
That would be incorrect. That is strike
Yeah.
one for Alex.
Yeah, that figures.
We how many have we named? 10
10.
or 10? Okay. Ah, okay. I have to.
I will say I hate how much the Mariners and the Astros have come up so far in this list,
Yeah,
whether as losers or winners.
I'm not, I, man. I feel like I should know more of these.
I've got two more names in my head, but I don't know if they're accurate.
I'm gonna take a guess here. I'm not actually sure if they've thrown a combined no-hitter, but the Yankees?
Yankees is incorrect. Strike one.
What? Oof. Okay.
Man.
I don't know why. I have a very distant memory. This is not accurate. I am not sure. But the Baltimore Orioles?
That is correct.
Woo!
Ah,
That was giving me my next guess.
How far away was that one, or was that recent?
So I only have the number.
Okay, then no worries.
So the one I marked off was the second combined no hitter.
Oh wow. Okay. Not even remotely
Oh
what I
my
was
God.
thinking, but
Yeah.
okay, we'll take
It's
it.
oh man. I'm gonna have to do that thinking thing again. Man. There've been a lot more recently, but I feel like we've named all of them. That's the issue.
I think so too.
Oh, the Phillies. I remember.
Wait a minute. Did I write? Did I make a mistake here?
I
Okay.
remember the Phillies one
Yes, I
because
remember that too. Did I write down a different team twice?
it was at Turner Field. I remember this.
Okay, yes, I wrote down. Okay, I wrote down a different team twice. My mistake. Yes, Phillies is correct. Let me change
Let's
one of
go.
these real quick. I think it's this one. Yeah. All right. So Mac, you are correct. Phillies.
We each have one strike.
Yes. All right, Alex, back to you.
Just because I'm thinking of different team names as well, I'm gonna go with the Pirates.
The irate Pirates, courtesy of Francisco Cordova and Ricardo Rincon, the only extra innings one on the list.
Ooh. Okay. All right.
Let him
100% a
cook.
guess, but
All right, let
okay.
him cook. That's 13 out of 20. Both of you have one strike.
Ah, oh, man. This is trying to think again. I'm gonna
That
go.
thinking thing is quite hard to do at times.
Yeah, I'm not sure if these guys have one. I'm gonna go with the Red Sox.
The Boston Red Sox had the very first
Let's
one.
go. Oh, wow.
It was Babe Ruth. He walked the first bat of the game, got ejected. The
Oh,
reliever,
right. That's the most famous
well,
one. The reliever,
yes.
Ernie Shore, came in, picked off the runner, and did the whole rest of the thing. So for a long time, Major League Baseball called it a perfect game. It is no longer considered a perfect game, and it is a tie game in our universe right now. Mac. at 7. Alex also at 7.
Okay. Honestly, at this point right now, I'm just going with teams that have a history with pitchers, especially. So I'm going to go with the A's.
The Oakland A's are Oakland correct. A's. Let me make sure that, yep. Vita
Blue, let's go!
Vita Blue, Glenn Abbott, Paul Lindblad, and Raleigh Fingers.
Okay, yep. Oh, we'll take those. We take those.
All right. That is a lot of points for Alex and one fewer point for Mac. It is 8-7.
Oh, my God. I know there are teams that have gotten close in the past. Man. Gonna go. I don't think they've done it. Man. I'll go with the San Diego Padres.
That is incorrect. Their only no hitter is a Joe Musgrove.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait, I'm an idiot.
All right, Alex, back to you. You have the lead. Can you extend the lead?
Let's see here. So again, I'm just going now with old teams at this point. I'm going to go with the Reds.
The Cincinnati Reds are not on the list. That is strike two for Alex.
Fair enough. I just have the last. I just need, if Mac loses, I get my first trivia win.
All right, Mac. All right. Five teams left. Or five options left, rather.
Oh my God. I'm gonna go with the Giants.
The Giants? Incorrect.
What? Come on. Baloney.
So Alex grabs the W. That is strike three. You're out, Mac.
What? Okay, fine.
We did the same amount of chances.
Yeah, same amount of chances. You had 10 guesses each. You struck out. He hit 8 out of 10.
So what were the available five? Okay.
There's another Angels. That was not the Tyler Skaggs game. It was a 1980 or 1990 effort. Mark Langston, Mike Witt. Mike Witt is the only one of two pitchers to be a part of a regular no-hitter and a combined no-hitter. The Houston Astros have four. They did it to the Phillies in the playoffs. They did it to the Yankees at Yankee Stadium twice. And they did it somewhere else. They did it to the – wait, didn't they do it to the Phillies again? Wait a minute. Where's the other one? Oh, yes, they did it to Seattle. So they did it to the Yankees at Yankee Stadium twice. They did it to Seattle. They did it in the playoffs against Philly. So you're missing another – Astros, missing the Braves. This was one started by Kent Merker, who is also the last Brave to throw a regular no-hitter, followed by Mark Wallers and Alejandro Pena in 1991. You're missing the Baltimore Orioles, who had two. One, the one I counted was from 1967 when Stu Miller got the final out. And in 1991, they had four pitchers combined to no-hit Oakland in Oakland. And last, but certainly not least, the fourth no-hitter on the list, John Blue Moon Odom and Francisco Berrios combined for the Chicago White Sox, also against the A's in Oakland. Also, 11 walks in that game for Chicago. Congratulations, Alex. You got the W.
Yeah.
That's a new one for me. All right, we'll take those.
I battled.
I don't deserve the win, I guess, on like all of the last like half of what I was doing.
Hey, if it makes you feel any better, Mac, the Oakland A's struck out 12 times against Nick Pivetta today. So,
wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yes. So, Alex, congratulations. Peace out, folks.
Yeah. Thank you for hosting that, Splash. That was a lot more difficult than I expected. If I'm being completely honest, it's just amazing to me that there's some teams like the Yankees and Red Sox who have been around forever don't have a combined no-hitter. So,
well, the Red Sox have won, the Reds don't.
Oh, sorry, that's what I meant. Anyway,
and then the Astros have four,
yeah, the Astros have four, which
including
is like
two at Yankee Stadium,
one in the World Series. Anyways, this brings us to the last segment of our show as we end every single episode with the moment to ourselves, 60 seconds to talk about whatever the heck you want. Baseball, not baseball, sports, not sports. So Who wants to go first on this one? Splash, you raise your hand first, so your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
So I don't remember if I talked explicitly about this on the podcast, but back in January, February, March, when we were doing our positional rankings, I was at work and I'm thinking, well, how am I going to rank the right fielders? And I'm like, okay, we'll do Judge one, obviously, and then, Betts and Tatis and Acuna and Tucker and all of those guys. And I thought to myself, I need to put Acuna two, but I also had to be honest with myself and say that if Acuna wasn't back this year, it was probably the end. He had probably lost enough athleticism from the ACL injury, and I was going to be out on Acuna. And that was a hard realization as a fan, as to see one of your favorite players get injured like that, and he might not be able to come back. And we've seen it with different Braves. We have Michael Soroka, sorry, who was one of the best pitchers in baseball for, a year and a half. And he's thrown like 20 major league innings since, double torn Achilles. So I'm very grateful that Acuna has been one of the best players in baseball this year, has been probably two behind Ohtani, and Ohtani's doing superhuman things. So I'm very blessed. So I was going to be out on Acuna. I'd said, hey, this is the shot for Acuna, and I'm going through the same thing with Lamar Jackson right about now. But this is going to be the year for Acuna that it's make or break almost. It's, yeah, he's on a good contract. He's going to be a good player. I got that. That's fine. It's going to be a value for the money. But he is back to playing at a level that he is the best value of any player in Major League Baseball. That includes rookies that haven't signed anything. Because guess what? The Reds are going to have to pay Ellie De La Cruz. They're going to have to pay Steer. They're going to have to play McClain. Everyone's going to have to pay. The Mets are gonna have to pay Alvarez. You're gonna have to pay them. Julio Rodriguez just got a huge deal. Tatis has a huge deal. Soto is about to get a huge deal. Wander already has a huge deal. Acuna is the best value in baseball and has been since the day he signed the contract. So I'm just grateful that Acuna is back to doing Acuna things.
All right, Alex, do you want to go next? Or
Yeah, sure, let's do this.
all right, ready? 3, 2, 1.
So this is something I've talked about a lot before during the moment to ourselves, and it's just about, mental health awareness and all that. Something that has been, very, very personal to me and very important to me as well. It is just to get another reminder first, if you're having any problems, please do not keep them bottled up. Talk to someone, talk to anyone. And one of the things I'm noticing a lot more as I'm going through my own stuff here is that how hard it really is to say something, how hard it really is to have and to be able to say what's going on and not, it's like, and not be judged about it. Or where, like, I had a friend of mine, I said, hey, I'm not doing so great. And they took it in a completely other way. And I'm noticing that's happening a lot. It happens to other people that I've talked with about it. And I think it's one of the things it's part of the bit that makes it really hard to actually come out and do it. So just keep true. And if you need help, just keep reaching out. Someone will take your hand.
Yeah, and for sure. I mean, that's when I was in college and grad school, I definitely, had to deal with that a lot. So, yeah, for sure. So anyways, I'm gonna get started with my moment to myself right now, which is in 3, 2, 1. So a little before we started recording the show, I was kind of going on my soapbox about the whole trade deadline's coming up, and the Mets are probably not going to be contending this year. And there's just this horrible attitude right now within the fan base that they should trade everyone, Pete Alonso, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, literally everyone under the sun for some reason the team wants to trade. And I acknowledge that David Robertson and Tommy Pham and Mark Canha, Brooks Raley, Carlos Carrasco will probably not be Mets by the end of the month. Even, but I just want to say that rebuilding is not as easy as you think it is. It's not like MLB The Show franchise mode where you can trade anyone for anyone. If the Mets were to do a complete sell-off right now, if you like doing a lot of losing, by all means, be my guest. Enjoy the losing, but you know that rebuilding means a lot of it, and this fan base every fan base complains enough about losing, and you're going to be doing a lot of losing if you do a full sell-off and go into rebuild mode. So I'm just saying, if you want this team to sell off every single piece they have, just be prepared. There's going to be a lot of misery and a lot of pain. So I'm just going to say, don't do it. Also, tanking is dumb. Don't tank either. So anyway, that's our moment to ourselves. But yes, Splash.
So we're going to do an unprecedented double moment to ourselves. In addition to what Alex was saying, if you didn't watch Liam Hendricks' speech at the ESPYs, what are you doing? Go back and watch it. But one of the points he made was that every time he got a message, thinking of you, hope you're doing well, praying for you, whatever, that could be the difference for some people in whatever fight they have, whether it's cancer, whether it's some other horrible illness, disease, whatever have you. So don't be afraid to reach out to people. And if you're reaching out to people and they're not receptive, know that you're still doing the right thing, even if they aren't receptive that day. Maybe they'll be receptive the next day. Maybe they'll be receptive the next week, or maybe they have people in their lives that they are receptive to. So, don't be afraid to tell someone you're thinking about them, that you're, hoping they're doing well, whatever that may be.
And by the way, that speech was amazing. I'm really, really happy for Liam, obviously, that he's back on the field. Also, another quick ESPYs thing, but if you saw the Damar Hamlin, his presentation, that was pretty awesome too. So if you guys have a few minutes, definitely go back and watch those, for sure. I mean, it goes beyond just what goes on in between the lines, really. So anyways, that does it for us today. So thank you all for listening. Like I said earlier, you'll probably see these every Tuesday morning, that is, barring some schedule changes, which do come up, obviously. So make sure to follow all of us on Twitter. Follow myself at Matthias_A_K. Follow Alex at TheSportsGuy242. Follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. Make sure to follow our Twitter account at LAR_baseball. Get all sorts of cool content there. That's also where our podcast goes up. So make sure you follow us there. Turn notifications on if you want to, also, by the way. But for everyone at Losses Above Replacement, thank you all for listening, and I hope to see you all real soon.